The Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast is proud to be sponsored by Dr. Spork's 3D Terrain. From retro greenskin outposts to elven fortresses and obelisks, this is hands down the best nostalgic scenery you'll find out there, and all at stupidly reasonable prices. Check it out for yourself by heading over to bedroombattlefields.com/spork, that's S-P-O-R-K, and turn your tabletop into a scene from White Dwarf circa 1994. Andy Chambers not included. Brought to you by bedroombattlefields.com, this is the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. On this episode, we welcome back Old Hammer pioneer and author of the legendary Realm of Chaos 80s blog, Orlig. Our chat back in March was one of the most listened to episodes of the year so far, and this time around I put the call out for members of our community, which you could find at bedroombattlefields.com/discord, to submit their questions to the man himself. We got some really good ones in, and we're going to kick off with this question from Ed, who asked Orlig, what was your favourite army that you've owned?
Oh, that's a good one. Favourite army. The trouble is, I was so notoriously bad for creating whole armies. I suppose I never actually really owned one. The Sisters of Battle, which I've restored recently. That's a great army I have. It's one of the few armies I do have. I haven't quite finished restoring it. Why do I love it? It comes from the Silver Age, doesn't it? The Paul Sawyer years, just after I left uni. Was that 2000, wasn't it? I'd always flirted with going back into the shops, and I remember buying, was it Morgana Le Fay? Wasn't that like a Bretonian character on a unicorn? I remember buying that and painting that at uni and going into the store, and I just wasn't very impressed with what I saw, really. But when I went back in about 2000s, I got the Witch Hunters, and I really got that. Was that I'd always never really liked Rogue Trader. I didn't like it at the time. Now I think, what a fool. I like the background. I used to read it, but I'd never had the figures. I was a fantasy man. But when I went back in 2000, I didn't like fantasy anymore. I didn't like the new stuff. It all looked a bit silly. Why did it look silly? Because it was all plastics, and the miniatures, you know, the weapons were huge, weren't they? They had axes the size of your mother-in-law. It just didn't appeal to me. But the 40K stuff did, especially those Jez Goodwin Witch Hunters models, which were really, really nice. I remember going in, I bought the paint set. I think I just got my first teaching job and had quite a bit of cash. Didn't know what to spend it on. And I bought the whole paint set they did. I had every colour, the only time I ever bothered to do that. And I got a lot of their metal sets, painted them up, loved painting them up, had the time to paint them up. And yeah, I think to this day, it's the only army that I am going to own, isn't it? Because I've still got them. So I've got two squads of Witch Hunters. The Sisters of Battle, I've got two of those. Two squads of that. I've got the Witch Hunter himself and his retinue. I've got some Sisters Repentia. I think that's what they were called. And the funny ones that were lobotomized ones with chains off their arms, but I can't remember what they're called off the top of my head because I've not finished restoring them. And I had a few other pieces as well. I never actually used them. Really in a serious game, but I really enjoyed painting them because I painted a lot of them at my grandparents' house, and they're obviously both passed on now. So I like having them because it reminds me of that time in my life and my grandparents. So yeah, I suppose the army I love having now would be the Witch Hunter stuff that I have and still have. Maybe I'll use it one day. But from classic Warhammer armies, now that is a question, isn't it? Warhammer armies, what a publication, or even Ravening Hordes before that. I mean, which army do you love? I mean, I built Realm of Chaos armies for Slaanesh and Khorne, and I used them extensively. I love them. They're all with proper 80s figures. I made them. But I suppose the another army which I love making was a smaller Nurgle one, because the reason I like the Nurgle one I made, if you look at my blog years ago when we did the Tale of Four Painters or whatever it was called, I did a Nurgle force. I think I like that one because that was at the height of my painting ability. So when I look back and see those figures that I did at that point, that was when I was really roaring along and I could see. I could see, and I had the skill and I had the time to really go for it. So, yeah, I hope I've answered the question. Yeah, I've answered the question of what's your favorite army, and I've given you about three examples. Please forgive me.
Next one then from Gambrinus. That's the funny thing about online, isn't it? Like in communities with handles, you see a name all the time, but you very rarely hear it read out. So maybe I'm not getting the pronunciation.
Well, I know him. He appears on my blog a lot. So yeah, I chat to him a lot. I know what you mean about you meet people. I mean, Sleepy Sod is a guy who I quite often talk to on my blog. And we were at Salute once, and I met this guy, interesting chap, talking to him. And after about 10 minutes, we worked out who we were. But that had been a problem at the original Oldhammer weekend in 2013. Nobody knew who anybody was. We knew everybody. It was a bit like going to university. Hi, my name's James, and I do archaeology. It was a bit like that. Oh, who are you? Oh, that's you. Yeah, it was an interesting time. So anyway, what was the question? It was Modern Games Workshop, wasn't it? Was that him?
Yes. So, yeah, he was asking, I know we all like to take the piss out of modern GW a bit, but are there any of the modern models, say, in the last 10 years or so, that you do like?
Yeah, there are, actually. And I've been tempted multiple times to buy them. Now, one of the things I've done since 2020, on and off, is attempt to read the Horus Heresy series of books. I really like that. I loved Horus Rising. What were the first ones? Horus Rising. Then it was, I can't remember what the other ones were. Flight of the Einstein, wasn't it? I remember when those books came out. Was it 2006? I just was obsessed with them. Loved reading them. That Dan Abnett's book, Horus Rising. How many times have they re-released that over the years? I loved the Horus Heresy story. I know it goes off on a tangent a bit, but I have been trying to read it during lockdown. It was my job to look after very vulnerable children. And I spent most of the first lockdown sitting out in the sun on a huge school field with about six or seven very vulnerable children. And they played, which was a great thing for them to do. And I didn't really have a huge amount to do. So we used to sit in the sun and read. And I actually read about the first seven novels, I think, in that series again, with these children when they were doing their reading. So those weeks just went on forever, didn't it? I've always loved the Horus Heresy. So the miniatures that have caught my eye are actually the modern version of Adeptus Titanicus. I would have loved to have had the original Adeptus Titanicus. That was one set, one kit I never had, never owned it. I think I owned all the others on and off. I mean, my old collection, I think I had absolutely everything apart from Adeptus Titanicus. Never saw it, always loved that set. Primarily because it was in my first issue of White Dwarf 108. It's the front cover, the famous John Blanche cover. But yeah, I've always wanted Adeptus Titanicus, and it's a Horus Heresy link now, isn't it? Like it always was. And looking at those box sets, I think they do two of them. I think there's Adeptus Titanicus now, which is a starter box set, isn't it, where you get the Titans. And I think there's a smaller one, isn't there, where they do the infantry and tanks and stuff. I always loved Epic. I mean, if I had the money, if I wasn't doing up a house and the lady of the house didn't worry about things that came through the door, I'd buy both of them box sets. I don't think the miniatures are as characterful as the original Space Marine and Adeptus Titanicus ones, but I think they're good. And it would be something I would use. I'd play it, you know, and model it and enjoy it. So, yeah, not everything's naff, is it, that they make? I mean, a lot of it is. But why is it naff? It's naff because it doesn't appeal to the likes of us, does it? It appeals to their target audience. If you go to Salute, you'll see stuff that is made for the likes of us. I mean, the Masters of the Universe miniatures, have you seen them yet? They're brilliant.
I've got She-Ra, yeah.
They're brilliant, aren't they? I mean, that's what appeals to us. That's what they're making that for us, aren't they? But you have to remember, we're the old people now, aren't we? We're the old, nearly 40s, 50s. We're not young bucks anymore. We're not cutting edge. They don't make this stuff for us anymore. We're lucky because we were there at the golden age. I mean, everything else riffs off it. But, I mean, they don't make it for us. But I like those Horus Heresy, Adeptus Titanicus set. And one day I would love to have some epic armies. I mean, at one point I owned the original metal versions of the Space Marine. And there would be one thing I'd love to have again. I actually had all the original metal figures that you actually see inside issue 108, because the plastics came out with Space Marine, but they actually had a whole range of metal. They were quite rare metal Space Marine characters with all the special weapons, all at that tiny scale. I actually had a few of those, and that's one of the things I miss, because I would have liked to have done something with them. But there's always hope in the future of getting one of them nice sets and maybe doing something with them when I've got more time. So there is the answer to that question. I hope people like that answer. Maybe you too are a fan of Adeptus Titanicus.
Good stuff. Next up on the list then, Mr. Daka says, over the course of your hobby life, what has been the most positive memory or personal outcome?
Well, that's a very deep question, but I thought about this good and hard. I can actually answer it. When I thought about everything, it was probably coming face to face, and I've got a picture which I will email you of this, coming face to face the first time with, I don't know if you know about Ivan Bartlett's Chalice of Doom model. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I've heard it, but no, you have to enlighten me.
The Chalice of Doom, I think, was one of the original winners of the first, or one of the earliest proper Golden Demon Slayer Sword models in the 80s. And it won gold for the diorama category. And what it was like a cup, imagine a sort of bronze cup, over bubbling with blood. And on it, Ivan Bartlett, who was a really, really influential sort of painter and diorama maker in the late 80s. Never found out what happened to him. We did search for him for many years at that glory time when we touched base with loads of the studio staff, like Andy Craig and Kev Adams and all those people when we were meeting. We never found Ivan Bartlett. We never found Paul Benson. Hope they're still out there somewhere. But yeah, he made this astonishing entry, and it's this goblet with blood dribbling out the side, and on the top there's this little scene with numerable skeletons. Of course, why do I love it? Because some of them are the classic plastic skeleton horde, which I love, and some other sort of early 80s skeleton pieces that are on it, handcrafted trees, you know, beautiful 80s style painting ground. And I think there's a necromancer on there as well, raising the skeletons up. One of the skeletons has got moss all over it. And it's just, I remember seeing it years and years ago when I was a kid, and I thought, oh my God, that is absolutely incredible. And I used to try and make these things. I remember going down the woods where I lived in Dorset, and you'd pick some crappy old lichen off a bush or a tree, some bits of sand, something that you found in the garage, and you desperately try and make something like it. Of course, you failed miserably, but it was just a wonderful experience. And I always loved that, as many people will know. I always loved the skeleton kits. There's so much you can do with them. Bob Naismith's classic produced skeleton sprue still stands up today, I think. And yeah, anyway, so this model I loved. And when I was collecting original White Dwarf materials and the books and stuff, in the early 2000s, around the same time I was doing My Sister's Battle, I was collecting all this stuff that I'd wanted. Because obviously, when you get your first, when you start your career, you're unmarried, got no kids. If you get a professional job, you're earning quite a bit of money. You don't really know what to do with it at the beginning. So I was wasting it all spectacularly on Games Workshop stuff, of all the books, all the magazines, everything I want. In about a year, I bought them. And, you know, I remember finding these pictures. I don't know if you know about the Fantasy Miniatures hardback books that they did in the 80s, the Golden Demon ones. Many fans of the era will know about the Fantasy Miniatures books. They did three or four hardback books which documented the Golden Demon awards that they were doing and were coming quite serious at the end of the 80s. And I think it's the first or the second one has this Chalice of Doom in, and I used to spend hours looking at it, trying to recreate and loving it. And I think one of the times we were at Stoke Hall doing an Oldhammer event, we were allowed inside the stately home for the first time And this was like, oh my God, we didn't really know Brian very well then. And he said, well, come into the house, come and have a look. And we didn't realise what was in there. We didn't really realise. I remember we went round the house and, you know, it was an incredible building. Huge, and obviously I think there was about five or six of us enthusiasts who went in there. And he took us round to the room and we went into a sitting room. And I've still got photos somewhere I took. And we were just asking about different models. Everyone had 101 questions, you know. What have you got this model? Have you got that model? And he would say, yeah, I've got that. I said, I bet you haven't got the Chalice of Doom. And he said, yes, I have. And he turned round and there it was on the cabinet behind him. And he reached up and brought it down. And it had like a plastic case over the top, thick with dust. So he blew the dust off it and he just got it out on the table. And there I was in front of the thing. Absolutely amazing, overwhelming. Someone snapped a picture. I'll email it to you later, and you might want to use it as your header for this episode, and you can see it as well, me poring over it. But, you know, absolutely astonishing to have seen it. I mean, that was really the beginning of when we would come face to face with so many iconic models, because we were allowed, you know, when it was quiet, they'd open the cabinets up and we'd get to have a look at them, you know, like that. The combat card dwarf wizard, what's his name, Helwig or something he's called. You know, I had him, various other really super rare miniatures that we were able to get out and just handle or look underneath, all the tanks, all the buildings, all that stuff. It was remarkable to later on to have that experience. You know, you've seen it in magazines for decades and there you are holding it. But nothing ever beat coming face to face with the Chalice of Doom. I never saw it on display again, so it must have stayed in the house, but some of the other things came out. But yeah, so go and do your research. Have a look on one of the miniature sites. Google the Chalice of Doom and check it out. Yeah, brilliant model.
That potentially leads into our next question then, which is from George, who asks, if you could have stolen one mini from the Ansel's Cabinet of Legends, which would you have snaffled?
Oh, there's so much choice in there. So much choice. I mean, if you ever were lucky enough to see them, I mean, it just went on and on and on and on. You could look at them for hours, and I know many people did, and I've got thousands of photos I took very badly of them. But I was thinking about this over the last few days, which ones? I would go back to the Adeptus Titanicus Titans, because I remember going for the cabinets one day, and they were, like I said, it was very overwhelming to look at the stuff. And then those Titans, I think they appear in the Heavy Metal article in White Dwarf 108, sorry. They were just there on the shelf. Shelf was open, and I reached down, picked one up, and they're just gorgeous. I think I can't remember who painted them now. I think Mike McVeigh might have done them. But there's about three or four of those original Reaver Titans that appeared in that issue of White Dwarf. They would be the ones I would have snaffled one of them. I would have put it in my pocket if I'd had the chance, because what wonderful models they are. And also, I never got to – I had one Titan. I bought it in a blister pack in about 1990, a Reaver Titan, and I gave it away. I think I gave it away for an Amiga game back then. So the one I ever had and ever painted, I think I've still got its foot somewhere. But I gave it away, so I never even had a chance to paint one. And for many, many years, I wanted the Forge World Reaver Titan. But thank goodness I never bought one, because I'd imagine it would never have even got started, wouldn't it? The thing was so massive. Yeah. What would you have snaffled?
Probably that Gene Stealer cult limo.
Oh, that one.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember seeing that many times. That was a scratch build, that was.
Really?
Yeah, I remember we had that out once, and it was a scratch build. I think it was made out of plastic card.
Right.
It was very interestingly painted. But yeah, all that, I mean, they had the Imperial Guard, didn't they, that had been infected and all the rest of it. It was all very aliens, wasn't it? All that Gene Stealer cult stuff. I think they brought it back at one point.
Who would have painted that?
I wouldn't have been Colin Dixon who painted it. I don't think I ever found out. Might have been Darren might have done it, or Andy Craig. It's hard. I don't know. I don't think we ever found that one out. Quite often you turn them over and it'd actually have written on the inside who'd done it. They would be like, yeah, writing on that. Particularly the buildings would have Phil Lewis or Dave Andrews written on the bottom. But I never bothered to check the bottom that one. I should have done, really, shouldn't I, in hindsight? But yeah, great model.
So Clive was asking, if you could paint any miniature for the first time again, what would it be?
Well, I would say, you've got to go back to those early days of your sort of painting career, haven't you? When you're young and you get your first miniatures. I think my first miniatures I ever bought and paint were Oxycetylene and the Tin Man, if you know that rather obscure little blister pack. I don't know why I bought that. At the time, I had no idea what it was. But it came from a White Dwarf sort of throwaway game called The Crude, the Bad, and The Crude, the Mad, and the Rusty, which they released in an early issue. And they had this little dwarf with a little blowtorch and sort of a Tin Man kind of big character. And I had both of these figures. The little dwarf I gave away from my teacher. I remember his name was Mr. Cooper. I painted it very badly and put it on his desk, so I gave that away. But still had the Tin Man in my collection until everything was sort of lost. And he was very badly damaged. His foot kept snapping off. And I used to use him in all my games. So perhaps if I had my time again, I'd get that blister pack back and do it. But they weren't ever my favourite of favourites. My favourite of favourites of those early miniatures I painted were the Plague Bearers by Kev Adams. Because I remember them coming out. There was always something about them Plague Bearers and the Nurglings that I loved. Maybe it was the artwork, maybe it was the sculpting of the figures, but I just loved them. And over the years, I tried to paint them again and again, and I never felt that I did them justice. And back then, I wasted so much time with the internal. I used to use Nitro Moors back then before I discovered Dettol. I had the eternal, I don't know if other people are the same, the eternal pot of shame where you have these figures that aren't good enough. So you start painting them and you just put them in the paint stripper and you get them out again, you clean them up, you start painting them again, it's not good enough, put them in the paint stripper. And for a long time, I spent ages just not painting them. One thing I've learned in more recent times is to actually paint the things and get them finished and get them out there. And I think I did a Plague Bearer, I think this year or late last year, and I really went to town on him with his greens and his gore and all the rest of it. Yeah, probably them Plague Bearers. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go check them out. Kev Adams' original Plague Bearer figures, I think they're the best.
Would that have been one of his that was in the deck of combat cards?
Oh, yeah. I think that was an unreleased one because there were a few unreleased ones and really rare ones. There's one with a particularly Kev Adamsy smiley face that's quite rare. But, yeah, I bought them as a blister pack and painted them many, many, many times. Loved them. Just always loved them. And I always wanted to do a great unclean one as well. Always loved all those demons. And, in fact, when I started my blog all that time ago, it was Realm of Chaos 80s because I wanted to focus on Slaves to Darkness and all the chaos stuff, which I'd loved. And I'd amassed loads of it really cheaply on eBay. You know, I had tons of the stuff. I think I had practically everything that was released at that point. And you could buy it for £1. I mean, I notice now that you can get one Chaos Warrior for 15, 16 quid now. One. Back then, you could have got like 20 or 30 of them. And so I was buying them up madly and enjoying them. I don't think I enjoyed them enough. I think, like many people, I was guilty of putting them in a drawer and amassing a huge pile of stuff that you're never, ever going to use, but it's there. And I think a lot of people do that. I think we get trapped by, we all like Smaug, aren't we? I think I said that last time. We're all sitting on our lead pile, aren't we? Not doing anything. And that was one of the freeing things, is not having one. Though I have recently, for the first time, made some new purchases. I've got some Night Horrors and some early Citadel Zombies that I picked up this week. They're the first things I bought for many, many years. So unfortunately, I've started buying again. I did say to myself, I wouldn't buy until the house is finished. Wouldn't buy. But I found myself, you find a bargain online, you can't help it. Yeah, so check out those if you go on to So Legends or Collecting Sigil-Dale Miniatures, have a look at those early Plague Bearers. Absolutely fantastic character models. All the horror of rotting chaos mixed with the character of those lovely early goblin and orc ranges that Kevin Adams so wonderfully put into those figures.
And that does kind of lead nicely into the next question, which is also from Clive. He was saying, which miniatures have you ever given up on when painting?
Oh, so many. I used to call them unfinishables, I think. Unfinishables over the years. Everyone has some unfinishables, miniatures that you start and you can never finish. I now attempt to finish them. I mean, since I've been going through my boxes of stuff, and occasionally my children bring me boxes of stuff back and I go through it and I find bits of old project in them, and I do attempt to finish them off. I mean, some Nurglings I did recently were finished off, and some other bits and pieces were finished off. But if there was one miniature that stands out of all of them, I'm sure it's different for everybody. What did I paint over and over and over and over and over and over again? And never liked the result. I would say Macbeth. Macbeth. I got my hands on a Macbeth when I did that. Lady Macbeth and Macbeth. I remember Lady Macbeth painted up really nicely. Because I like to paint a miniature in one go if I can. I have a system where I will clean them up, I'll base them, I'll undercoat them in white. And then my particular way of painting is to then block all the colours I want to do onto the figure to see if it works. And then once all the colors are in place, I would then use inks, a mixture of inks and paint. I usually use quite an earthy brown. I don't like to use pure black. I know some people do, but I would use a very earthy brown and then put that very earthy brown over the top of the figure. And that would be my starting point. And I always start with the face. Don't know why. Without getting the face right, you can't get the rest of the figure right for me. So I always start with the face, paint the face up, then the hair, and then work down the figure. Now, for whatever reason, I couldn't get Macbeth's face right. Something about his beard, something about his crown, I couldn't get it right. And I couldn't get the gold right either. I must have painted that figure over and over and over again. I've always struggled with gold. I don't know why. I could never get gold right. I've learned relatively recently, that's the thing about old school painting, is I still use the original colours. I've actually realised that just use mithril silver and mix in a bit of brown, a bit of red, a bit of yellow, and you get a much better gold than you can actually get, you know, chasing down these old paints or buying coat de arms or something like that. So, yeah, getting that gold right, I found deeply frustrating, and I tried again and again and again and again and again, and I was never happy. And in the end, you know, I wanted to move on to other figures that I actually just put out what I felt was the best I was going to get at that stage. I don't like to go back and finish or go over things. Well, I certainly didn't then. Now I'm a little bit different. I don't mind going back over things. I'm just Googling it. Let's have a look. Can I find a picture of what he looked like? Here he is. June 2016. So nearly 10 years ago.
Yeah, coming up 10 years.
Coming up 10 years since I did him. There he is. Yeah, I can see he's old. Oh, he doesn't look so bad now. Maybe time has, he's got his red gloves and boots, matching gloves. I tried to go off the picture, off the front, but I did such a really good, great job with Lady Macbeth. I didn't like how he looked, but maybe I've been harsh on myself looking at him there.
I'll stick a wee link in the show notes for the listener to get a look at.
See, one of my hopes is to get my hands on all this stuff one day and restore it all and see how well I did. Because looking at my old stuff, I hated it at the time, but I think, oh, that's decent now. That's decent. I just wish I took more pictures so I would have these things to look at now. But yeah, Macbeth, he was a right pain to get right. Oh, there's one here, April 2020, when I've got the whole lot out. Look at that. I think I had every single figure in the set painted by that point for Macbeth. Oh, yeah, and those two knights as well I hated doing. I can't remember what their names were. I know there was another gold knight. It was only relatively recently that I did Death Scar. If you look on my blog, you'll see Death Scar, that classic Chaos Knight that goes on the front of the Warhammer 3rd edition rulebook. I actually had his figure restored him up and painted him and finally found the trick of gold, for me at least. And that's to put a little bit of green over the top, little green glaze over gold. Just, I don't know, just gives it a bit of age, a bit of character to it. Otherwise, it just looks like, you know, daddy's just left Ratner's and he's got the world's worst, you know, gold jewellery. Yeah, I can see my Macbeth set here. I had all of them done, apart from the two mounted knights. I never got around to painting them, but I had to use, I think her name was Renata. She was an even rarer figure than, I can't remember what the lady was called in that particular set, Sandra Prangle. I could never get my hands on Sandra Prangle, so I used an even more expensive proxy in her place. It was the same figure, it was just a variant. But she had a staff rather than a sword. Yeah, but that was a fantastic project. I dread to think what doing a project like that today would cost.
Yeah.
You were trying to do Macbeth or... See, I was talking to Tim Prown at Salute, because he does absolutely incredible old Hammer-style miniatures. And having gone around the whole show with Stuart Klatchef, who I always go to all these events with, he's an obsessive collector and hoarder of old-school fantasy, Raoul Parther and Citadel. He knows his stuff. We actually stopped off and saw Tim, because obviously I've known Tim Prown for years and years and years. His stuff is by a long, long way the best stuff you can get out there, in my opinion, for that characterful metal, old school charm and character that I have seen working in the modern era. There's far too much resin for my liking and computer design. I understand why. Because many modern designers don't have the background or skill or chance to learn the stuff that Tim Prown did, because he obviously learned his trade from the masters. He sat there, didn't he, with the likes of the Citadel design crew back in the 80s and 90s and learned all this stuff. So if you're looking for modern figures that have that style and look, go to, what does he call it? What's his stuff?
Die Hard,
that's it. Yeah, go and find yourself some Die Hard figures. And I was actually saying to him, you should do some figures inspired by those old scenario packs. Wouldn't it be great to see a sort of Scottish lunatic style fantasy figures again? He's done some great Chaos Warriors and he's done some great Undead. Yeah, some characterful stuff like that again would be nice. I'd like to see a modern style Clansman, not the American style, thank you very much. The proper Scottish style. I'd like to see something like that again done. It would be nice, the sort of thing I'd buy. Yeah, so Macbeth was the hardest figure that I went back to again and again and again, and was a right pain to do. Maybe I'll have a chance to paint him again one day. Who knows? If you've got a spare Macbeth lying around, yeah, don't feel embarrassed to send it to me.
Yeah, at least you're happy with it now, looking back, is often the case. Mr. Dacker returns with another question. What is your single most regret when it comes to decades in the hobby? So we were deep before, now we're going dark.
Dark? Oh, biggest regret. After what, 40 years doing this? And not appreciating it at the time, maybe not appreciating things at the time, but then who does? Who does appreciate it when you're in the moment? I mean, one thing that I will always regret is not going back to Wonderworld before they shut it. Because for me, my hobby psyche, if you like, was totally inspired by my local friendly game shop, which you would call now, wouldn't you? My father was a fanatical railway modeler, something he was desperate that I would like. But I'm sorry, but narrow gauge never did it to me. I wanted my fantasy figures, that's what I wanted. And I remember in the back of White Dwarf, it used to give you, didn't it, local stockists, and there was one in Boscombe and it was called Wonderworld, and I think I nagged for a very long time about going to visit it. And I think one Saturday when I had a bit of money, I think my dad took me and we drove out to what I can remember as being, in those days, it's in Dorset now is the Jurassic Coast. You know, you've got footballers buying houses down sandbanks. You know, you go, I go home now, and you have all these ridiculously expensive houses, everything's upmarket, you've got clubs and bars and all the rest of it. When I moved there in the early 80s, it was just this drab, desolate place. And going to Boscombe, going to Wonderworld, it was a drab, desolate place then. I remember getting out the car and walking down, all very excited, and seeing this grimy shop window, Wonderworld, and it had all this kind of, we would now say toot, wouldn't we, in the window. Stuff in the window, but I knew that they sold Games Workshop stuff, and I wanted to go in there. What startled me though was there were motorbikes parked outside, and as I looked in through the window as my dad came up the road, there were like bikers in there. And I remember feeling, oh my god, that's a bit scary, because of course that was a bit of the demographic back then. I went in. I remember it was a really old shop, and it had that traditional, you know, Arkwright store bell that went off when you went in. And there was loads of toot in it. I remember there was giant Freddy Krueger dolls, Freddy Krueger masks, horror videos, all this stuff that I'm remembering. All kinds of bizarre Japanese robot kits, Gundam and stuff like that was there. And you would walk through this sort of smoky atmosphere, because of course everyone smoked in shops, didn't they? And the sticky carpet, getting past these bikers. And there it was the blister wall. And those of us who will remember what the blister wall was like, it was like stunning, wasn't it? Did you ever see a good blister wall, Matthew?
Yeah. I mean, well, maybe not on a par with your days in the 80s, but the ones in the 90s to me were still good.
You see, the 90s were okay, but they did everything red and yellow then. So all the package was red and yellow. But of course, in the 80s, what I'm remembering is each like army, if you like, had its own branding on the blister pack. So the Orcs ones were green, and fighters were kind of blue and white, and they all had completely, and Realm of Chaos was red. And to have this whole wall of all these different colored blister packs, it was absolutely astonishing. What the hell am I going to buy? You know, it was, the whole range was there. I mean, I remember seeing Dragon Ogres. I remember seeing the Chaos Dwarf Juggernaut thing in a clam pack, I think it was. I remember picking it up, and I had enough money to buy it. And they had, you know, all kinds of astonishing figures that I would love to have now. They didn't have much pre-slotted, but I remember underneath they had bargain bins, which you could dig through for loose figures. And like I said, what was the first thing I bought there? I bought Oxyacetylene and the Tin Man. It's like, why did I buy that? And I also think, if I remember correctly, I bought some Paranoia. Do you remember Paranoia, or are you a bit too young to remember Paranoia?
No, I don't remember that.
Paranoia was an RPG that appeared in White Dwarf a lot. It was like a sci-fi game, quite zany. And I bought some Paranoia robots. I mean, why? Why did I buy that stuff? Later on, I think I went back and I bought a Man Mangler. But I think, and I've seen it in my own children and my partner's children as an adult, and I think the same thing must have happened to me back then, is you're so overwhelmed by the choice, you can't choose.
Yeah.
And of course, you've got a grumpy parent, haven't you? Or grumpy parent, go, you've got to go, we've got to go. And so you're looking around and you just grab something, don't you, on a whim. You know, I think that's what I did. I grabbed stuff on a whim. And I didn't actually have a chance to actually pick up something really decent when I was in there. I mean, I remember being in there, and I liked Doctor Who as well. That's something else I liked as well. And they actually had, way before you could buy the soundtracks, they had tapes there that you could buy copied at home, where, you know, the off-air recordings, years and years before. You could buy them on CD, or, I mean, you can download them now on Audible. But I remember being fascinated by these lost Doctor Who stories that I'd heard about. You know, maybe buying one of those. I never did. Thank goodness I didn't. I suspect the audio would have been terrible. But, yeah, I suppose my biggest regret is not taking advantage of the fantastic ranges of figures when I was actually there in the period. I just bought random bits of toot, really. Later, I got a little bit wiser. And I bought, obviously, Skeleton Horde I got, and the Warhammer Fantasy Regiments box set. I had a couple of them. And I started to buy Jez Goodwin Ogres and Chaos Chariots, and I had a good array of stuff. And then I had loads of Blood Bowl stuff. But that was a bit later, and it was harder to get the blister packs for Fantasy as time went on, because, you know, 40K was so successful. Whenever I went back to to Wonderworld, there was a lot more of that. And sadly, I didn't buy that. And I was a bit of a big box game fan. So I used to get a big box game. So I got, what did I get? I got Advanced Space Crusade one birthday. I got Space Marine another, Blood Bowl another. So I got into those big box sets. But I certainly didn't spend enough time getting decent blister packs, especially now as people collect them, don't they? And you see them for 50, 60 quid each. And as I said, my friend Stuart, he used to love collecting mint blister packs, and he used to collect them. And I know it's a hobby in itself, isn't it, collecting these blister packs? No doubt they're trying to get back, aren't they, to that moment, trying to recreate the wall of blister packs in their own houses. Though you could have got a lot more for 50 quid in 1988 than you can, sadly, today.
For just $5 a month on Patreon, you'll get at least 2 new bonus episodes every month. These are extra conversations recorded specifically for Patreon that you won't hear anywhere else. And you could listen to them today by going to bedroombattlefields.com/Patreon. That's bedroombattlefields.com/Patreon. And now, back to the show. So Mr. Daka had another question. He says, any words of guidance for someone discovering the world of tabletop gaming in 2026?
Do what you want. Don't follow other people. I mean, that's one thing that I've always done. I've always gone my own way and done what I wanted, whether or not other people liked it or not. I mean, when we started playing or collecting old Warhammer stuff, in, you know, 15, 20 years ago now, it wasn't fashionable at all. People laughed at it. There was only a handful of us. I remember Garth wanting to do like a vintage rally, and there might be like 20 people there. Obviously, this is a worldwide love now. I mean, you go on the internet, you can see that there are old Hammer events all over the world, all over the country. People are collecting and painting these figures on a scale that I never imagined would be possible. Now, when I'm researching figures, you know, I get a figure and I research it. I mean, originally you couldn't find any information about it at all. And I mean, that's one thing I'm pleased about. You Google search a figure now and my painted stuff comes up because no one else has painted it and put it on there, or certainly not with enough reach. But yeah, I would say if you were starting the hobby today, or even starting an old Hammer hobby, do what you want, do what you like, play the game, play the era that you liked. Don't worry about what other people have done, because that was the whole point of it. The whole point of it is enjoy the period that you love. I mean, this, I remember some fool came up to me once, and I can't remember where I was, started going on about how Warhammer 3rd edition, Warhammer 2nd edition, they're clumsy, they're stale, they're old, you know, don't play them, you know, they're out of date. And I remember thinking, or saying to him, you know, is chess out of date? You know, is snooker out of date? Because they don't change those rules, do they, every few years and reproduce, you know, chess edition, 15th edition. They don't need to, do, because the game is there. It's what players want. And I think it's true of any game type that you like. I mean, I saw some people playing Dark Future not so long ago, and many people think that's an atrocious game. I never played it myself. I did own the set. Did have the set at one point, but you know, if that's your thing, then yeah, go out there and play it. I mean, you'll find someone out there who likes it too, because you know, these games were popular for a long time, and you know, as I've always said, the majority of people who like old Warhammer figures sit, that they do it at home by themselves. Yeah, they might go to a show once or twice a year, but they're primarily solitary people who sit at home and enjoy the hobby at their own pace. They are the majority. The minority are the people who get out there moaning and groaning about what other people are doing. They're very much the minority. But like always, it's quite often the minority that gets heard. So yeah, if you're starting a miniatures hobby right now, just do what you like to do. I mean, and do it to the level you want to do. I perhaps wouldn't recommend chasing YouTube algorithms, because I've looked at some of those, and I can just see people producing hobby material not because they love it or are passionate about it, but because they think it's going to get them some likes and some clicks. And that's not the reason for doing it. I mean, that's one thing I've always done. You won't find any AI writing stuff on my blog or anything I do. You won't find anything fashionable. You won't find anything. I'm not chasing views. I'm not chasing followers. I was never interested in that. I was just going to do what I liked, and if one or two other people liked it, then that was fantastic. And that's still what I do today, and that's what I would say to anybody. And you know, you walk around somewhere like Salute, and you can see hundreds of people doing exactly the same thing. They're enjoying whatever it is that they're enjoying, and they get on with it. And you meet like-minded people, don't you? If you use social media wisely, or attend shows, or join wargaming clubs, you'll eventually meet someone who likes the same thing as you. You and I, Matthew, we both like the She-Ra figure, don't we?
Definitely.
And I think there was a Castle Grayskull model I saw there as well, and a Battle Cat that I liked very much. But I didn't catch what the manufacturer was. Do you know what the manufacturer was of those?
God, I'm going to kick myself now. No, I would just be having a stab in the dark. It'll come to me later, which is entirely unhelpful for the listener.
You can edit it in later, can't you?
Yeah.
Something else that I'd recommend people, if you're particularly interested in our era of 80s, early 90s, or any era really of Games Workshop in particular, because I know it's very popular. I know there's a Middle Hammer stuff. I would always say collect, if you can, the original books and magazines. I know a lot of people do, but I've also met a lot of people that go, I use the PDF. Now I'm using PDFs now because I've lost my stuff. But trust me, having got my magazines back, it is 100 and 200, 300, 400, 500 times better to actually have the actual magazine in your hand. There's so much detail that you get out of these magazines that you miss, I think, on a PDF, because magazines were never designed, were they? These books were never designed to be read on a screen. Mm-hmm. They were designed to be read on the toilet, weren't they? Or in bed, or wherever you wherever you choose to read the thing. I would say collect the original publications if you can. Start there. Immerse yourself in all of it, and then just pick what you want to do. I mean, one of the things that I think is terribly missing in modern gaming, modern collecting, modern painting, is personality in painting. If you go back and look at the old heavy metals and the old stuff from 80s, even into the 90s, you could often recognize who painted something by the paint job, couldn't you? You could say, oh, that's a Paul Benson because there's loads of yellow in it. Oh, that's a Kev Adams because he's done all the funny little green stuff plants on the bottom. You could actually recognize style. And I think one of the things that I look for when I look at other people's work is style. When I'm on social media, when I'm on blogs looking at other people's stuff, and I don't have enough time to do it really, but when I do have a chance to do it, I love to look at it, is how other people achieve stuff, their style, and you quickly start following someone. I think there's a great lot of emphasis now on buying the right paints. Buy the right paints, and it's almost like painting by numbers of a figure. And I do notice a lot of the modern Warhammer stuff, it looks like it's been painted by the same person. You know, and you see these videos on YouTube, paint like me, and there's about 50 or 60 of them. They all paint the same way. They all use an airbrush. They all use the same paints in the same way. And that was it. The John Blanche approach was to be arty and creative and do your own thing. So I'd also say have the courage to build and develop your own style of painting and celebrate it and enjoy it. Because for someone like myself, who's done this for, 40 years nearly, and there's nothing better than seeing a miniature you love painted by someone else. I mean, I've recently done the Balrog figure, the classic pre-slaughter Balrog figure with the whip. Do you know the one? You know the one I'm talking about?
Yeah, combat cards again.
He was on the combat card, wasn't he? The Balrog figure. Yeah, I recently restored him. He's a Fiend Factory Wing Demon with whip and sword, if I remember correctly, but also the C-31 Balrog, originally released in 1982. He's actually upstairs with me. He's actually up here in my little hobby room. I've actually got him. And, what a fantastic figure. I mean, I can't believe that I mocked pre-slaughter all those years ago. I never actually owned any. I just thought he's rubbish. But then when I actually got my hands on some, I actually realized some of this stuff is absolutely monumentally good. You know, it should belong in a museum, really. That the quality of the design, the sculpts, the power, and this particular model is one that has always stood out to me as a figure that I wanted, and a figure that I wanted to paint it. And eventually, I found it and got hold of it. But I remember there was another painter when I was researching that. I think his name's Matthew J. Cullivan, I think his name was, or Sullivan, I think his name was. And he did a version of this model. And to me, it was absolutely fantastic to see it after painting mine. He did a much better job than me. He did it quite a few years ago. Yeah, and just searching for a figure that up, you can see loads of people have had a go at the same thing as you and how they approached it. Obviously, a figure like that, you might want to link it to Lord of the Rings. You might want to link it to something else. I mean, I had terrible trouble with this whip, but you know, other people did brilliant things by making the whip look like it was made of liquid metal, and the sword had some great blood effects, all things to inspire. So yeah, that's another thing, is get out there and have a look at what other painters and other people are doing, and don't be frightened about what your figures are looking like. You know, don't end up like me and endlessly stripping your figures, because I know when I've spoken to people before, when they start miniature painting, they're never happy with what they've produced. And yeah, I mean, I think most of us are never happy, but you reach to a point where you think it's acceptable. And it's like anything, if you want to get better at painting miniatures, you need to paint lots of miniatures. You can't paint the same figure over and over and over again and stress over it. You just got to paint a figure and move on. And I learned to paint in the 80s as a kid. I learned to paint again in the early part of the 2000s when I got a bit older. And I think over that sort of 10-15 years, I really got, in my opinion, my best painting skill I got to. And then, of course, I forgot everything and I've tried to learn it all again, not being able to see properly with terrible teeth in recent times. But I think I'm doing all right. And what pleases me the most is to see other people painting the same miniatures as me and enjoying their interpretation of these old figures. Do your own thing, paint it the way you want, don't worry about other people, don't buy those dreadful paint sets which allow you to paint for numbers. And top tip, never use the same color out of the pot. Never use the same color that comes out of the pot of paint. I think that's really important as well. Always mix two or three colors every time. I like color harmony, which means if you look at a little bit of the same paint in everything you're doing, it sort of holds those figures together, and then maybe use a spot paint, but spot color. But that's the art of miniature painting, isn't it? And it is an art. It's not science. It's something you have to find for yourself, isn't it? And I think it's often the least thought about, isn't it, in our era. There's a frantic desire to amass huge amounts of treasure, but there isn't quite the same frantic desire to get it painted. So my advice is paint the stuff, then play with it.
Sage advice. I'm painting right now.
What are you painting?
A second edition Space Marine monopose, one of the wee monopose guys.
What, a metal one?
So no, it's the second edition set.
Oh, the session. Oh, I know the ones you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, So
I've got a terrible. Someone gave me an absolutely appallingly treated group of the original B-key release for Rogue Trader. I've got them in a bag in my workshop, covered in enamels, absolutely filthily stuck together with poly cement, and at some point in the future it will be my task to try and restore those. So I do like a Space Marine. I haven't painted a Space Marine for years and years though.
Yes, yeah, you
know, yeah. My favorite Space Marine models of all time, actually, I think are the original Chaplins that came out in the late 80s, skull face ones with their maces. I always loved those figures. Sadly, I had them all and gave them away. That's another piece of advice. Don't give your treasure away unless you're swapping it for something you do want.
Yeah, they mentioned Salute a few times. Like, yeah. had you been to Salute before? Was this
first time? I've been going to Salute for years. I think the first time I went was in about 2012. Been going for years and years and years, seen it change. Stuart and I go up. We went last year and we went this year. We used to go a lot in the past. It has changed a lot in recent years. Like I was saying to you, the demographics change. I mean, it used to be great to go up because that was a great thing. I mean, Wargaming, the people who make the stuff are the same as you and I. And I remember we used to go up there and you'd go to Salute years ago and you'd see Rick Priestley walking around but with a little bag or something he'd bought and you could chat to him. Mike McVeigh used to take his miniatures there and used to see him and chat to him. All the old Hammer guys we met, we'd see up there. The one thing that's lamented, though, which was glorious, was the old Salute Bring and Buy. Now, that was a place to go. You got into Salute years ago, just before Old Hammer really took off. You could go to the Bring and Buy, which was in one of the corners, and people would just get rid of their old miniatures for ridiculous sums of money. And I remember going in there and buying two Snotling pump wagons. I got a unit of the original Mummies. What else did I pick up there? I think I got some Jez Goodwin ogres, just for like £8 for four ogres, you know, ridiculous money. People get, back then, people didn't, I don't think it had the same value as it came later on. I mean, people like Stuart always blamed me for for the prices going up, but I'm sure it wasn't anything to do with me. I just advertised the fact that these figures were out there. They looked nice and people wanted to buy them, as did many other people. And there's only a limited amount of stock, isn't it? Quite why people are so obsessed with recasts. I don't think there's the sheer number of recasts that people claim that there is out there. I just know that some of the castings that came out of blister packs were not very good because, you know, it was the end of the day or it was someone's first day and not all miniatures were great. But yeah, you could get so much stuff in the Salute Bring and Buy. But I would recommend it to anyone. There's Partisan, isn't there, up north? So that's another one which I've never been to. I've never dared venture to it. But yeah, it's always great to go to Salute. Have you ever been yourself?
No, never. No, you've never gone?
No, it's very overwhelming. It's an awful lot of stuff to see, but yeah, it's well worth a trip for anyone interesting. And they say it's one of the biggest in Europe, and it is huge. They have you waited in a second hangar, and the queue's massive, and they give you a free sort of goodie bag of stuff. But if you want to see wargaming and miniature collecting, and it's as it is in 2026 or 2027 next year, go to Salute and you'll see it, and you'll also discover some really wonderful things. I mean, I think is it called Burrows or something? What did we see?
Burrows and badgers.
Yeah, burrows and badgers. That's brilliant.
Yeah. I love that.
Stuart and I discovered that this time. Oh, that's like Wind in the Willows meets Warhammer Fantasy Battle. It's absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I think when we went last year, I think they'd released a second edition of that game and there was an absolutely massive queue, but we never delved any deeper. But yeah, that's absolutely astonishing. I think if I was a gamer today getting into stuff, that's the sort of stuff I would get into. And also, a lot of the miniatures were metal, which is...
Michael's been on the podcast.
Oh, I see. I'll have to look back to that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll look back to it. Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, I really love that stuff. That's absolutely, absolutely fantastic. It's just the character, isn't it? There's character in every one of those animals. There's also a little bit of menace in them. And I'm sorry, but those plastic kits just cannot compete. I mean, that's one of the sad truths Warhammer stands out as an embarrassment when you go to a place like that. And that's partly responsibility of the players. I mean, you look at these beautifully made tables. I often talk about Jeff and Oakbound. He had done this astonishing small level skirmish table with water effects and trees. And a lot of the historical gamers, you know, they really go to town. Yeah, a lot of it's laser cut buildings and resin buildings. But they really go to town with the scenery. And then you see a 40K game and it looks, oh, my goodness, it looks dreadful, doesn't it? They've just got these bits of plastic buildings stuck together, naffly, and they've got a variety of what look like action figures from the, you know, this great big road. There's no infantry anymore, is there? No infantry. There's all these massive, clunky pieces of model that clunk about, and it just looks awful, in my opinion. It doesn't look as spectacular as some of these other systems that people put out and show. I mean, if you're a pure historical guy, Empress miniatures do absolutely astonishing sort of historical stuff. And there was this great ship battle thing that went on as well. I mean, there's just so much range and so much on offer at a place, you know, in wargaming. You can do anything you like. You could do a different project every year and do a completely different scale, different era, It could be fantasy, it could be sci-fi, you know, you could do anything you liked. It's quite an amazing hobby if you think about it, isn't it, really? And what's brilliant about it is the beating heart of it is still in Nottingham. It's still in, still very much in the UK, isn't it? It's still something that we lead the world in. So yeah, it's great to celebrate the fact that, you know, Brian made that, didn't he, by moving to Nottingham and moving everything there. The lead belt is still there, going strong, isn't it, as ever?
Yeah, I mean, you did, as we got wrapped up last time, and I'd stopped recording, but you had some really poignant words about that, just about you know, trying to appreciate things as they are just now, because
that's my view, forward. Yeah, because things change. And it's just really about enjoying that particular era for as long as you can enjoy it, really. I mean, what's the future look like? AI dribble. I mean, that's already creeping into sort of Oldhammer stuff. You can already see AI written articles. When I'm researching stuff, I'm finding terribly written stuff. I even found an AI biography of myself, riddled with mistakes. I found that quite amusing.
I made that.
Did you make that?
No, I'm kidding.
I found it. It was like, who is Orlig? And I thought, well, what's this? And I clicked on it. It's on some page somewhere. And it was like an attempt at a biography. And it was just like, they didn't even get my name right. They thought I was someone completely different. And I was like, what? I thought, what's this? But what I did discover is my old Farquhorf idea. I had a setting, it was called Farquhorf, which was a village in the Empire not far from the Moot. And obviously there's a slightly rude connotation there. And Farquhorf was a battle it's a setting that I used from the 80s. And actually, I lived not far from Corfe Castle. It's an actual place. And as a schoolboy, there was a legendary pub that may or may not have existed called the Farquhorf Inn. That we used to talk about as schoolboys and said, my dad was at the Farquhorf Inn last night. So I always used it as my sort of my Warhammer setting, Farquhorf. And I did a battle. If you look back on my blog years ago, and actually all my buildings that I'm currently working on and my board that I'm currently working on, inspired by Wayne the Duke Millard, that genius of scenery building, will be my Farquhorf setting. But I think it's really funny that someone else has nicked it and has been using it in a sci-fi setting. And various other people have used it as well since then, which I find really funny. If you do a little Google now for Farquhorf, I mean, my original one I did in 2016 is called In Defense of Farquhorf. It's the first one I did, which was a battle that I've fought over the years. And I think it's funny that Farquhorf, this little schoolboy joke that we had in the 80s, has sort of spread around and is being used by other people. But I saw in a mag somewhere, was it a mag or a blog or website or something, Oldhammer Sheffield, was it Lead and Steel, someone had done a Farquhorf, Welcome to Farquhorf in a sci-fi setting. I thought that was quite funny that someone had done that. It was funny to see the return of Farquhorf again, and that it's got a sort of a sci-fi thing. I think if you go to Dorset now around there's quite a few Farquhorf houses as well that crop up every now and again. Interestingly, I remember my dad was a district nurse. He took me, because there's lots of rude names when I grew up, which actually links into that area of Warhammer as well. There was a village nearby called Shitterton. In Dorset, Shitterton, and the council kept trying to change it to Shipperton. I seem to remember people kept stealing the sign of Shitterton. I think it's still a place, Shitterton. I'm pretty sure you can still go there. I perhaps wouldn't do one as obvious as that. I think it's making it a little bit more subtle. Yeah, if I remember correctly, it's in Beer Regis, not far from where I grew up. My dad used to love a rude place name and used to take me to them. If I remember correctly, if you go to Shitterton today, the village who have fought fantastic battles in Wareham, where I live, of keeping their rude village name. If you go there now, I went a few years ago, they have got a huge rock with the village name on it, carved into this rock like a giant tombstone, because people keep nicking it. They keep nicking the street sign. Yeah, it's a sort of amusing thing that I always liked about the fluff in the background of 80s Warhammer stuff is there was quite a few jokes, wasn't there? Quite often slightly rude. The Samantha Fox figure with, you know, imagine Games Workshop releasing something like that now. Do you know the Samantha Fox figure?
No.
Samantha Fox, it was a Citadel miniature. I think years ago I wrote a piece about Warhammer, women in Warhammer. And initially there was quite a bit of page three about their efforts. But as time went by, I think they did quite a sterling job. There was a lot of heavily armored sort of 80s ladies out there chopping and slicing with the best of them. But yeah, Samantha Fox is a particularly risque one that may not be suitable for being at work or when the children are around. Yeah, I mean, I always love the fun of you know, the wordplay and the jokes and having gits and knobs in orcs, which they still do, don't they? I think they still have gits and knobs in orcs, but that's Kevin Adams for you, isn't it? You know, slipping in rude jokes. And I sometimes wonder if they realise they're supposed to be rude now.
Yeah.
But I mean, I still occasionally go into a Games Workshop store. I still occasionally go in but I think the staff are frightened of us now, us old grognards. Because they kind of look at you strangely. They think, must be a dad. And they sort of slide up next to you, don't they? And they go, what are you painting? And in that kind of, let me help you buy a paintbrush. And you turn around and go, C-18 pre-slaughter zombies. And they look a little bit startled, don't they? And they go, okay. And they kind of back off like, and they leave you alone, don't they? Yeah, I still go in there. I look at their massively overpriced PVA glue. I always find that a good laugh. How can you sell PVA glue for that price? You know, I've seen, and also spray paint as well, astonishing prices. You know, I buy my spray paint at the local hardware store for £2.99 a can. And yet they sell it for 12, 13, 14 pounds, something like that. Yeah, I've always been perplexed by how much certain things cost. I mean, it was another response. I don't know if other people felt the same. Everything had hobby attached to it, didn't it? After the 80s went into the 90s, you used your hobby brush and your hobby knife, and you used your hobby clippers, and you used your hobby station. They attached hobby onto everything. And I think some of us, like myself, I certainly were dumb enough to not realize that if you actually went out and looked about, you could find this stuff for a third of the price out there in the wider world. So that's another bit of advice. If you're starting out, don't pay full price for anything. Shop around, go and see what's out there. Have a look at the railway modeling lot, because they have a lot of good stuff, and Hornby and stuff like that. They have a lot of good stuff that you can snaffle and use to give it that old school feel. That's certainly what I'm doing with trees at the moment. I've become obsessed with buying old Hornby trees in charity shops, because they have the right look, don't they, for 80s setups, I think, the old Hornby trees.
Well, it's been a brilliant chat. I've really enjoyed your answers to those questions, and I'm sure the masses will demand a part three, and maybe I'll even turn up for it.
Thank you very much for having me again. I wasn't expecting to do a second one, but it was fun to do it.
No, and I'll come clean to the listener as well. I stood you up last night, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
You were sitting there with your suit on and your glass of wine poured, and an empty chair across from you.
It's whiskey. I like whiskey, I'm afraid. I don't mind. Things happen, don't they? You know, I'll always talk about these stuff, and that's one thing. You know, one thing you can assure: no matter what happens with social media, no matter what happens, there won't be no AI, there won't be any slop, you won't see anything like that from me. You'll just see good, honest, hobby content and me raconteering about my love for 1980s Warhammer and everything that goes with it. So that's what I hope to do for the foreseeable future.
Brilliant. Well, we'll leave it there until part three, which we could hopefully organise at some point.
Oh, part three. Oh, wow, there we go. We'll leave it on a cliffhanger.
Thanks very much for listening to this episode of the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. If you enjoy the show, then please do share it with someone else you think might enjoy it too. And be sure to check out our Discord community of like-minded hobbyists, which you could find at bedroombattlefields.com/Discord. It'd be great to see you in there.